Welcome to the Wackle Gather podcast. My name is Judy Mitchum. Wackle is an organization for top female leaders in marketing, media, and communications. In this podcast series, I will be talking to some top female leaders, women who are also known to be change makers. This podcast is being released in advance of the Wackle Gather event on the 23rd of May. It is sponsored by Whaler, the most creative influencer marketing company. My guest today is Kerry Glazer, Executive Chair of the AAR Group, a company that specialises in client and agency relationships. In her career, Kerry has worked in agencies like JWT and WCRS before moving to the executive search company Kendall Tarrant and then to the AAR. Kerry has always been at the forefront of progress in the advertising and marketing industry. She is chairman of the industry's Time 2 initiative, which aims to eradicate sexual harassment in the workplace. And she's a former president of Wackle, where she campaigned for equality and diversity. As well as being a brilliant businesswoman, Kerry is first and foremost a people person. She exudes warmth and empathy and has that rare ability to listen and really care, which will explain why she was once heralded in Campaign magazine as the nicest person in advertising. A very warm welcome to Kerry.
Thank you, Judy. You're too kind.
I've almost felt I had to weep when I read that introduction. It is actually true.
That's very kind of you.
And you confessed to me in the lift that you had a late night last night. So
yes.
Tell us about that.
Yes, probably slightly ill-advised in that I seem to be being attacked by the ropiness that's affecting so many people. But it didn't stop me from joining up with a few of my Wackle mates and staying rather later than I planned I would.
Good for you.
Very irresponsible given that I was coming here this morning to do this.
Well, you're looking fantastic, if
Thank
I may
you.
Say.
Thank you.
So, of course, I talked about your career in JWT and WCRS, but your first job was actually much more interesting than that. Can you tell us where you started?
Yes, slightly insane change of career, really, when you look back to what I started doing. But I left school at 18 after A-levels to become a nurse. Having wanted to be a nurse from the age of about six, I stuck with my plan and applied to be a student nurse and then qualified after 3 years as what was then known as a state registered nurse. I think they're registered general nurses today, and stayed working in the NHS for the next 2 years. And how I managed to find my way into advertising is just, again, serendipity and chance.
Just go back to the nursing. I saw this fabulous photo of you on Facebook, where you publish photos of you in your uniform, and it's not the kind of uniform that they have today. It's that beautiful sort of call the midwife style, you know, outfit with the little headdress, and you looked fantastic.
Well, again, I really think you're being hugely kind here, because it was possibly the most uncomfortable clothing I've ever worn. It dates me, because it clearly no one in nursing has worn those uniforms for years, but it was the archetypal nurse's uniform with a very stupid hat that I had to learn to make. Probably the biggest challenge of my career, actually, learning how to make that hat. But yes, I look at those photographs and I see a very green and very young individual that was charged with a lot of responsibility.
I thought
actually.
You looked fantastic, and what an amazing start to your career, and that's probably why you are so empathetic and kind. So you mentioned advertising. You started at JWT.
I did.
But you didn't start on the front line of, you know, making exciting TV commercials and flying to Hollywood. You started in the information library.
I certainly did. When I was at college, having moved from being a nurse, I decided that I wanted to do something more. Perhaps if I'd studied medicine rather than nursing, I would still be working in the NHS. But I took myself back to college and did a degree. And whilst I was studying for my degree, I got sent on work experience to JWT, which was a revelation. I just fell in love with everything about the agency, the people, what they did, how they did it. Hugely exciting. And I think I was just very lucky. At the point at which I graduated, they had a role in their information and research department, where I met the business partner that I still work with, Martin Jones.
The legendary Martin Jones.
He'll love that when he hears this. I don't know, I think I was just in the right place at the right time.
Yeah.
And JWT offered me a job as the most junior person in the information and research department. And I was there for about a year and I managed to inveigle myself into account handling.
Do you know, I know exactly what that job would have entailed because I also did work experience in an information library and you basically would have been cutting out newspapers.
Lots of that. Lots of that. Every
Making
morning.
Scrapbooks.
Absolutely. And that was really the sum total of my experience at that point. So why they let me go into an account handling role, I have no idea. But that was my beginning.
So quite an eclectic career path, as you have mentioned. Mm. Nursing, advertising, headhunting.
Yes.
And then the AAR.
Yes.
So, I mean, you probably are a millennial before millennials were ever invented.
Well, I mean it either looks like I really couldn't decide what I wanted to do, or when opportunities came along, I thought, well, that looks interesting, and I think I'll learn something from it. I mean, I think the one thing I would say about all of the different roles, from nurse to account handler to helping people find jobs, placing them in agencies, to what I do today, every single step of the way has taught me something which has been useful in the next role. And actually, there is a kind of insane logic, if you actually look at what I've done to where I am now and the kind of role I undertake at AAR. I think nursing was fantastic training for this industry. And because I think it taught me very early on that it didn't matter how technically good you were at what you did. The skills of human empathy, listening, kindness, generosity, being able to form really good relationships, which meant the other person trusted you, was immensely important to how effective you could be in your role. And you've only got to think about the doctor or the nurse that's got wonderful bedside manner and how reassured that makes you feel if you're unwell, to understand how a client might feel or an agency might feel when you're speaking to them about something which is really important to their business. So it was very good grounding.
That's great advice for the young women coming up today through the career ladder, mm-hmm. which is that, you know, technical skills only go so far, but you need to have that skill of human empathy.
I think,
and of course, you're now in a specialist company that that is all about relationships, and so you must be very good with people.
Well, do you know, it's probably for other people to say, in all honesty, but I
can
think
say that because I've known you for about 25 years now.
I think there are two things that are really important in this, in that you need to practice what I call the economy of generosity, which is, and it sometimes gets lost in our business with our focus on trying to accelerate how quickly we achieve and trying to make sure that we get what we want out of our relationships. And I think it can make us possibly too salesy at times.
Yeah.
I think it can affect our authenticity.
Yes.
And I think if you are genuinely interested in people and what they need from you, and you kind of bury your ego a bit and you make it about them rather than about you, it engenders trust. And people, I think, will reveal things to you about their concerns or what they're hoping to achieve, their objectives, in a very honest way if they feel safe with the person they're talking to. And I think really and truly the style that I've found most effective is just to be a good listener and to always operate with kindness.
Yeah.
You know, even if you're dealing with someone who's quite troublesome, very often it's not a problem with you that they have. It's something else going on in their lives that's causing them to be troublesome in whatever role they're in. And I think you can achieve a lot by just listening to what that other person has to say.
You must meet an awful lot of people in your job. You've had very high profile positions. Do you ever get things wrong with people?
Oh, God, yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think there is no question that you can misread a situation if you're not careful, or you can make too many assumptions. When I go to meetings, I know that very often if you're sort of hosting the meeting or leading the meeting, everyone expects you to open it, take charge of it. And it's something that I'm very often quite reluctant to do, because I'd rather wait to read the room, see what people are saying, listen to what they say before I sort of draw a conclusion about what's actually going on and what the real problem is. I was in a meeting yesterday where we had been called to meet with a client who is considering taking their agency to pitch. And we were going to the meeting to talk about how that might be initially approached. But it was very, very clear from what was being said in the room, they didn't actually want to pitch.
Right.
It was more about, there are things that we think we need to put right, there are things that are going really well, we'd like more of. And it was more about them having a conversation with their agency team and really drilling down to where the issues were that were making it not quite as good as it uh-huh. could be. And pitching wasn't going to fix that.
Yes.
And so the response there is not, okay, when are you going to pitch and how are you going to go about it? It's, do you actually need to do this? Is there another way of approaching this which is better for you, the brand and the team? And I think you've just got to be an honest arbiter in there, even though our business is running pitches. It's not right to do it for somebody that doesn't need to do one.
Yeah, so that shows your level of integrity, that you can reread, you know, misread the situation and then redefine it.
Absolutely. And even if you miss out on an opportunity to help them this time, because you've given them honest advice, they will come back to you next time.
Now, you've confessed to me before, Kerry, that you are terrible at remembering people's names.
Oh, God.
So I have to bring this up. Tell us about your experiences.
It's so embarrassing. I mean, lots of people say this, but I have this uncanny ability to, the moment I'm introduced to somebody, I forget their name. And I'm then in that terrible situation where I'm hoping that I don't have to introduce them to somebody else, because it's going to be, and this is, and I won't remember their name. One of my classic appalling moments was actually in new business for AAR, where I had cold called a client that wasn't in pitch mode, but I wanted to get to know with the hope of building a relationship with them. And he'd been quite tough on the phone, actually, but I had convinced him that it was worth, after about an hour of begging, that it was worth meeting me and my colleague. And we duly tripped off to his offices in Wimbledon, I think they were. And unfortunately, this particular gentleman has a name which is two first names. I'm not going to say what they are, right. But either name could be his first name.
A bit like sort of Frank or something.
Well, sort of like Frank Peter.
Right,
or,
got it.
Or Graham John.
But I see.
And somehow, in my first email to him to arrange the time of the meeting, I'd managed to call him by his surname rather than his first name. And he came back with a little joke saying, that's not my name. And so I apologised profusely, and we got over that. And it was a little icebreaker, maybe. But anyway, we tripped off to his offices in Wimbledon, and we're sitting in reception waiting for him to come and meet us. And as he comes towards us, holding out his hand, I call him by the wrong name. I call him by my colleague's name. I was there with my colleague, Paul Phillips.
Not even
his first name or his second name. Another name completely. And I went, hello, Paul. And I'm sorry, his face, it went from warmth and friendship to what really sort of bordered on disgust at that point. And he looked at Paul as if to say, you know, what is she like? And the rest of the meeting was one of the most uncomfortable business meetings I've ever had in my life, where he only looked at Paul, he only addressed Paul, he didn't answer any of my questions, and it was a disaster, really.
Oh,
and truly.
That's,
we never
so funny.
Got to work with him. But now I have to write people's names down on pieces of paper in my hand because it's not because I don't like them. It's because my brain just doesn't function like everybody else's.
Well, it's such a funny story for someone who's so awful. Good with people.
Awful.
Brilliant story. You haven't always had it easy in your career, even though you're at the very much at the top of your game. You've had to deal with some adversity. And I know on a personal level, you had to deal with a very painful divorce in the course of your career.
Yes, I mean, I had two small children with my first husband, Barry, and very sadly, our marriage didn't work out. Our kids were only just coming up to 7 and just coming up to 4 when we separated. It was not easy because he had also suffered health problems, and I had then quite a demanding job and two kids that we had to try and make the best of it with, because I'd also seen other friends that had been through very adversarial divorces, and the impact on the family was just awful. And I think what we both decided at the time, even though it was painful and we didn't like each other very much at the time, and there was pain and sadness and occasional shoe throwing and, you know, sort of some arguments, we decided that, you know, the two people that really didn't need to be affected by this were our son and daughter.
Yeah.
So we took the view that we would maintain, albeit dysfunctionally, a semblance of family, that we wouldn't live together, but we'd do things like birthdays, Christmas. We even went on holiday together, separate rooms, obviously.
That's amazing.
And over the subsequent years, I mean, my kids are now nearly 23 and 20. Barry's my friend, and he's part of my family, and the kids seem pretty well adjusted. We're spending the weekend by the sea together as a family this weekend, and he's coming. And I think
that is incredible.
It is as much down to him as it is to me. But it was a conscious decision that, you know, because it didn't work for us, we didn't want it not to work for the kids. And I'm not saying that they've emerged unscathed. But it took some doing, and I must say that in no little part the support of my work partners and the acknowledgement that, you know, there were times where it was going to be a bit awkward with childcare and I needed to be at various sports days and assemblies, and there was never an issue about the fact that they knew I was juggling a slightly complicated system at home. They made it possible as well. So I was truly fortunate.
And that's a fantastic learning that you had the support for your work colleagues.
Absolutely.
And that you could, you know, become more resilient as a result of the
Absolutely.
Whole experience.
Absolutely. And I think one had to acknowledge that. I mean, one of the things that I think is very difficult when women are trying to juggle the fact that they are mothers as well as professional women, is that it is a very reciprocal arrangement. And I think that having flexible working and being able to do both depends very much on how you manage your work relationship with your colleagues.
Right.
And I think understanding that there has to be give and take on both sides, and that between you, you have to find a way forward that works for the team, not just for your needs.
Uh-huh.
The fact that you have children that you have to get home to see.
Yeah.
And I think because we always kept it balanced, and, you know, they had families as well.
Yes.
And we always said in our business, it's going to be family first. And that applies to everybody, you know, regardless of what their family circumstances are.
What a great principle for a company. Now, let's talk about women. You are well known for calling out bad behaviour in the industry, in the marketing, advertising and media industry. You are part of the Time To campaign.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you chair the steering group, as I mentioned before. Mm. Have you witnessed bad behaviour in the industry, and what is Time To set up to deliver?
I would say up front that all of these things are team efforts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, the reason why Time To has been as successful as it has is because people with real intent came together to do something about it. You know, I just happened to chair it and have, you know, the same level of intent. But I think it is very much a team effort, and I can't stress enough how important it is that you achieve through good teams. You know, it's not always down to one individual. But I think what I was shocked by, this really started in November 17, when during my presidential year, we had a gathering as part of WACL's activities for women in the industry, where we talked about sexual harassment and sexism in the industry. It was my belief that it was so much better than it was in my younger day when I was an account handler, where I used to see examples of sexism every day and, unfortunately, you know, was sexually harassed and saw other people sexually harassed. And I thought that day was over. Mm. But it's not.
Mm.
It's still alive and well in our industry. And I think we all felt it was quite a dark day when we heard some of the stories that were recounted during that evening. And it made us think, you know, this has, it's not only unacceptable, but it has a real impact on women achieving equality in our business. It's not just women that are sexually harassed. Men are sexually harassed too. but it's more prevalent amongst women. And I think if you experience it, and you've often experienced it more than once, and it's not dealt with properly, and you are put under some form of weaponized NDA, we lose talent as a result, because very often the person who's been harassed is the person that leaves.
Yes.
And this is not acceptable.
And that has a gagging order against them.
Absolutely. They can't talk about it. And it affects their career.
Yeah.
And I think some people leave the industry as a result, which I think ultimately goes towards it being difficult for men and women to be seen equally within organisations. So, yes, we launched Time 2. We are still building the impact of it. We now have nearly 200 endorsing companies within the industry, which is great. So people, I think, have got behind it because they genuinely believe that it is unacceptable behaviour. Mm. And very importantly, we've made it an inclusive movement.
Yes.
This is about everybody in our industry. It's not just about women.
Yes. Men can be our allies.
Absolutely. They are the most important allies, the most important ambassadors for change. Because I think if we make men feel like the enemy in circumstances like this, it's harder for them to help us.
Yes. And then they're marginalised.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You also, as an individual, you are very supportive to other women. I mean, I've known you for many years in various companies, and our paths cross every week. So I've noticed that you are a very supportive person to other women in the industry and people that you work with. You bring them through. We talk a lot about women helping women. Mm-hmm. Do women ever not help women? And have you witnessed that?
I have. I mean, there's that wonderful Eleanor Roosevelt quote that everyone says about a special place in hell for women who don't help other women. I have witnessed wonderful relationships between senior women helping more junior women, mentoring women, coaching women, you know, giving up their time and being immensely generous with their help, and also being vulnerable to those women, letting them see the bits that you didn't get right and the mistakes you made and the fact that you suffer from imposter syndrome in exactly the same way they do, no matter what your title is or how senior you are. Unfortunately, I have also seen women not helping women and being even tougher on other women who are perhaps going on maternity leave for the first time and not being helpful and supportive and responsive to those that their female team's needs. I think women can be very competitive with one another, and I think it's about channeling that competition towards achieving in business, but not at the expense of your colleagues, no matter who they are. I hope it's changing. Mm. I think there are wonderful networking groups from Wackle through to Bloom to Dawn to Working Girls Network, where women are coming together and forming really intense friendships and being supportive of one another. And I think that's a great thing because it engenders that sense that we should all support one another.
Yes.
And I think women too, if they see other women, no matter how senior in their organisation, not being supportive, they should call it out.
Mm.
They should really call it out because there's no excuse.
Mm. Yeah. Let's talk about wonderful women's networking groups and talk about Wackle Gather, which is coming up on the 23rd of May this year. What do you see as the value of Wackle Gather? Why should people go?
Oh, do you know, it's incalculable. It is transformational. It is one of the most inspirational, confidence-inducing, empowering days that anyone can attend. And I would urge any leader of any organisation to send your female colleagues on this course, regardless of how senior they are.
Yes.
They will come away feeling 100% more confident. I think the content that is honest and authentic through the day, where they are inspired by what people have achieved, but also reassured by the fact that these are still normal women with normal problems and normal challenges that they have to overcome in much the same way as the people sitting in the audience do. I think the hints and tips and guidance, the speed mentoring session, where I think some really honest advice is imparted. I've been to every single gather, I think, since it started, either standing at the back or more latterly buying a ticket fit for Hall 2, where the content is beamed through to a random bunch of wackalers and various other people who are not in the auditorium. And honestly, most years I have a moment of tears where I'm immensely moved by what I'm hearing, and I have a moment of inspiration where I think I'm taking that back to the office with me. I mean, it's just the most fantastic day, and I urge everybody to experience it if they're building their career in this business.
That's fantastic advice, and I hear that the tickets have almost sold out, so
grab one now if you've still not got one.
You have a daughter.
I do.
And Ella.
It is.
I've met her. Yes, she's a lovely, lovely daughter. Growing up in today's world, rapidly changing, seismic changes, what pearls of wisdom do you give her? and are you optimistic for her future?
Oh, you know, very optimistic. Really optimistic. Because I think she is part of the generation which sees themselves automatically as equal to their male counterparts, and is very self-possessed and very self-aware and knows her worth, and I and all her friends are the same, which makes me believe that this is part of a generational shift, which I'm delighted about. I think the advice I'd give to her is take no shit, because I think, you know, if you start life, obviously politely, take no shit, but if you're clear about your value as a contributor to business from the start, no matter how junior, I think it kind of sets the bar for you. I would also, I think, say to her, do not move jobs unless the job that you are going to scares the bejeebers out of you. Because my view is, and having observed lots of people moving around and moving myself, if you're not going to a job that's going to stretch you and challenge you and teach you new things, you might as well stay where you are. And I think that goes to this feeling that as women, we tend to look at an opportunity that's a bit scary and go, oh, no, I can't do that.
Yeah.
Whereas men will go, yeah, I can do that. And I would want Ella to think, that's really scary, I don't know if I can do it, but I'm going to give it a go.
Yeah, feel the fear.
Absolutely, because it's the way
advice.
To grow. It
yeah,
really is.
What wonderful advice. And on that incredibly optimistic and go for it note, I'm going to say a very big thank you to Kerry Glaser, Executive Chair of the AAR. I want to say a thank you to Mediacom, who have helped us put these podcasts together, and also to the team of the GDST. And I look forward to seeing you at Wackle Gather on the 23rd of May.
Thank you, Judy.